We have Elefantes and we have the Podesta brothers. We have people in very, very high places involved in very, very nefarious commissions of crimes against children, and nothing happens to them, my sister. Nothing happens to them. They go after the lower levels just to say, we did something. If you think that when you go to the voting box on November 4th, that your vote counts, think again. The POTUS is not elected, the POTUS is selected.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Today I have a real treat for us. We have Chief Taina Amai. She's just an amazing person. You'll sit and hear and listen to her, and you can just feel the strength coming, emitting from her. She's just, I really enjoyed this interview with her. Giving you a little bit of what she does and her background kind of tells you a part of how great this person is. Well, first of all, she's coming on to talk about trafficking within the Native American communities. And that was the focus of our conversation, but ended up morphing into a bigger picture, geopolitical, political, and just what how this is affecting the entire community beyond Native Americans and the world. And she says things that I'm really glad she was so open in this interview, because if you look at what she does, she's the chief of the Intertribal Confederacy of Iowa, but then she's also the head of the Intertribal Police, which is an international, it's Canada, it's North America. I believe they go into Mexico as well. She explains it, but they are like the FBI for the tribes. They go in and they investigate crime. So she's the head of all that. And she knows what's going on. Very interesting conversation. She has very good relationships with the chief of police in her area and with other law enforcement. She's worked really well with the FBI, although the FBI has problems with everybody. They have problems with all the local police. It's a love-hate relationship. So it's the same love-hate relationship anytime anybody gets involved. But before I get into this interview, I want to tell you about the latest video I put up on YouTube before this one, and it's getting extremely censored. I can tell when my shows get censored because they get so many less views than all the rest of them. And this one, it got clobbered. It's the top five and bottom five things that Trump has done so far in office. I suppose no one's happy with it because it doesn't support any side in the ring. I'm independent. I'm looking at things objectively. It's not all 100% going to agree with anybody because it's my own analysis, and I would probably change it if I had a bunch of smart people in a room arguing with me or debating with me on what is the top five and bottom five. And it can change over time. But I believe it's insightful and it gets people thinking. And why would anybody censor this? So I am asking you to please help get the word out on that video. I have another one that also was heavily censored. I can tell when they demonetize something immediately and then it doesn't get the views. I interviewed Jazza Fars. He's one of the most well-known journalists in Iraq. And yeah, he has a little bit of an accent and it's a little bit hard to understand some of the things he's saying. But it is such an important interview. And I recommend everybody listen to it. He gives you a lot of insight on what's the region and what the Iraqi people think. And he talks about Syria. He talks about Iran. He talks about it all. That one's being heavily censored as well. If you go down my videos and you see the ones, you know, I have 16,000 or I have 9, 12, some get up to 60, over 100. I have some over 200,000. But when you get one that has like 2,000 or you get one recently that has like 2,000 or recently under 5,000, you know that's being censored. Or unless people just don't like it, but I don't believe it because those are the two that were demonetized immediately. So I really appreciate it if you would share those. I'll have links below. And on those, I will give anybody permission to repost it. I'm on BitChute and YouTube. I'm having problems getting DTube and Steemit set up. So if you have a Steemit account, by all means, I'll have those links down and you can repost those two videos. I don't care. I just want that information out there. So let's get into the interview now with Chief Taina Amai.
Hi, Chief Amai. Thank you so much for joining the show.
It's a great pleasure and honor to be here.
I'm really excited that you're here. I wanted to talk to somebody who really understood the Native American situation currently and maybe historically, because I guess the history leads up to what you're dealing with today. But before we really get into the current issues, can you explain to the audience what your background is and what your title and role is?
My full name is Taina Amai, and I am the chief of it's a new intertribal confederacy. It's the Intertribal Confederacy of Iowa, abbreviated ITCI. I am of Apache and the Taino band of Arawak indigenous, which is the tribe that discovered Columbus in 1492. So my ancestry on my Taino side is a little vague because of the honest brutalities that took place against them. My Apache ancestry comes from Chief Victorio and his sister, Lozen, who fought by the side of my vice chief, her ancestor, Geronimo. My great auntie fought with Geronimo. I was actually born in Miami, Florida, and had many struggles that led me to the point where I am right now. I had to take sort of a re-journey or a rediscovery of my identity back in 1995, because, my entire family, they walk into any powwow, they say, yeah, these are Indians, but they are not connected. But my grandfather, who was named after my ancestor, Victoria, had told me, granddaughter, never forget who you are. So I decided to take that road and remember who I am. And I am very proud, but in a humble way, that I am able to connect to that ancestry. And it led me to various connections, not just here in the land we call Turtle Island, what is known as the Americas, but with the indigenous peoples throughout the world and non-indigenous peoples as well, wonderful brothers and sisters. And that's basically my story. I'm also a protector of any tribe that needs assistance. And I have what I call security agents or investigators, not just indigenous. I have non-indigenous investigators that help in cases which we will be discussing in this conversation. So it's a great honor to have literally an intertribal or multi-tribal association working to help build a better world.
Well, you're the chief of the Intertribal Confederacy of Iowa, and you're also the head of the Intertribal Police. Can you explain now? And when you say intertribal, is that broader than Iowa?
Yes, it is. Any tribe that needs anything investigated, looked into, if their tribal law enforcement requests assistance in checking something out, which again we will be covering, I will do everything I can with the resources I have, which understandably are limited because we're a volunteer agency. They call and they say, look, we have this situation on the res. And it goes to Canada and throughout all the tribes here in the mainland United States, and any tribes south of the United States border as well. they're harder to reach, but they are always welcome.
And you work with the local authorities, and how about with the national authorities?
The national authorities, an ironic thing is that there's kind of a love-hate relationship between indigenous peoples and the federal authorities. But I've had the pleasure a number of times to actually consult with the FBI on certain cases. So, there's kind of a love-hate relationship
I understand.
between us and them, but on a whole, in general, I do have respect for the work that law enforcement at every level, from federal to local, do to try to keep people safe, because we have really good men and women out there risking their lives to
Sure.
keep the public safe.
Have you ever walked into a room and forgot why you're there? Or forget a thought in the middle of a sentence? These brain fog moments are caused by dying brain cells. Your brain and memory began to decay starting at age 35. If you do nothing to stop it, your precious memories could be completely gone, never to return. The worst part is it's happening fast. By the time you are 55, almost 10% of your brain will be gone for good, 20% by the time you're 75. And most shrinkage is not age related, it's lifestyle related. If you are doing any one of three common habits, you are accelerating this shrinkage. But the good news is it can be reversed quickly and easily at any age. How? By stopping these three toxic habits you're doing every day that have been scientifically proven to damage your brain and memory. Click below for free information on what these three habits are and how to reverse this shrinkage.
One thing I you were saying is that you have a really great relationship with the chief of the local police. And it's funny because my understanding is the FBI and the local police departments have a love-hate relationship as well.
Yeah, it pretty much reflects that relationship. It does. Our local police department is to me one of the finest agencies I've had the pleasure to work with. They are great men, great women. The chief is absolutely wonderful. When I first established TIIA, which later merged with the ITC PD, so it's one agency with two names, sort of. I wrote him a letter immediately to introduce who we are, which is common courtesy in any law enforcement agency, if you think about it. If New York City Police Department go to Pennsylvania or something like that, their protocol is to advise their law enforcement that they're going. So that's what I did, and it began a really great working relationship between the local law enforcement here and TIIA.
Well, let's get into some of these issues that you deal with. And one of the big ones is the human trafficking issue and how it relates to the Native American community. Can you give us an overall view of the seriousness of this issue?
The seriousness, I don't believe that there are any words that can describe the seriousness, especially when it comes to the MMIWGs, the missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls of the First Nations in Canada, which at least they're facing the issue a little more seriously than they do here in the United States. But this is going to be a very sad thing to say, but there are no official statistics to detail the numbers of missing and murdered, exploited Indigenous women and girls for the First Nations or any of the tribes here, and especially for the Indigenous women south of the United States border in Central and South Turtle Island, there are no statistics, you know, to really count the men and women, the women and girls that have been taken, exploited, and I'm sorry to say it, this is so brutal, but, you know, tortured,
yes,
violated, kidnapped, and never to be seen again. There are no official statistics.
If you had to take a guess, just based on what you think, do you have any idea on what you're thinking it might be?
Well, considering the history of Central and South America, we have them in the hundreds of thousands, and that is a very, very conservative number, hundreds of thousands between Canada and the United States. In South America, where there were despotic governments put in place, for example, Augusto Pinochet in Chile, the man had a rapacious reputation of kidnapping and torturing Indigenous women. And that's in Chile alone. In Mexico, the same thing is happening. And I will add a recent statistic, which there is really no number, just information, that in what is known as Puerto Rico, which is one of the islands of the Taino Indigenous people, women have been disappearing. And yes, men have been, they've been assaulted, murdered, cut up in pieces and left never to be found again. And that's on a small sliver of island. So I don't even dare guess at an estimate. But if I were to shoot at a number, you're talking about probably the hundreds of thousands to a couple of million women that are gone.
In how long of a time frame?
Since 1492.
Oh, since
1492. Okay. But if you're looking at recent history, you know, we didn't have a recorded history in writing until the Cherokee created their syllabary. But the stories that we know are so recent that it is impossible to actually count how many women and girls have been taken for trafficking, for sex slavery, all those horrible, horrible things. And here's the sad thing. One of the reasons why there are no real statistics is because in FBI terminology, Indigenous women and girls are what they call high-risk victims, because the conditions on the reservations are so horrific, the poverty so terrible, and the crime rate within the reservations are so horrible that they are considered high-risk victims, which means that these are victims that really don't matter.
Mm-hmm. So does everybody know someone who has gone missing?
I personally have no one in my life that had been taken, abducted, kidnapped, or exploited. Not that I know of, because my family is so disconnected amongst themselves. I will say, and hopefully with my vice chief's permission, she was one who was out in the streets since the age of 12, and she was badly used by people, but she's a survivor, she's a warrior. She makes me very proud So, you know, here's a shout out to Raven Sanchez. She's my vice chief of ITCI. She's been through her share of suffering, and she's the rock
She's seen a
upon which I
lot.
lean. She has seen and been through a lot, but she's a true survivor, a real true warrior, you know. And for any guys who think that women can't be warriors, they got to meet this one.
Well,
She's awesome.
so much of your warrior spirit is how strong you are mentally.
Absolutely.
So now Canada, they're starting to crack down on it. My understanding is there's, you know, I saw some numbers in Canada. There was like 50,000 women and children missing from, you know, just one area. What are they doing in Canada that they're not doing here? I mean, you're saying an FBI just doesn't even view them. They're a high-risk group, and so they don't even bother with them. What are they doing in Canada to try to curb this activity?
I think that under the current administration, under Trudeau in Canada, I have my issues with Mr. Trudeau, but I think he's really, really trying to build a relationship with the First Nations. But as in all things, there's a conflict between corporate interests and government. So, you know, he'll naturally be attacked for his attempts to make right the many wrongs that were done to the First Nations people who have lost daughters, lost mothers, sisters. I think that what they're doing is that they're really, really trying to break down the abuses that create the conditions for kidnapping and for trafficking. And then, of course, you know, when the woman is of no use to them anymore, they kill them. These are facts that people are afraid to face, but you know, we need to face them, if not as indigenous peoples, as human beings. So I,
Absolutely.
you know, and you know, Canada is, I think, is making a strong effort, you know, to find out what's going on the preserves
Who's
in
taking these people?
now that I'm going to go into some dangerous territory here, Sarah, because to me, trafficking implies proprietorship. So I, you know, and you're going to have to consider the fact that the takers are often non-Indigenous people. These are so-called self-anointed businessmen who find a lot of money. And one of the reasons why so many women are missing and never found is because they hide their crimes very well. A young girl on a preserve or reservation finds such desperation, they often find themselves in out of tribal land, outside the love and care of their families. They wind up on the streets, and then they fall into that FBI high risk crime or victimology, high risk victimology. And you know, this happens to girls of every race, if you think about it. The only thing is, when it happens to non-Indigenous, they tend to pay a little more attention. Now, who's taking these girls? I'm going to be dead honest. The same people that take, let's say, a French Canadian girl, a beautiful young woman, of English or Scottish or French ancestry, but are Americans, the same men that take them are also involved in taking the most vulnerable ones, you know, who nobody except their own families and their own tribes would miss. So we are dealing with a multi-tentacled issue here. You know, we just can't say that missing Indigenous women are a singular target. I think they are part of a bigger problem. The problem is that for over 500 years, they have developed a policy of genocide. And that genocide negates the mentioning of these Indigenous women and girls that are taken. I recently published a poem, and that poem was published in an e-zine called Whisper and Thunder. Anybody who wants to check it out, it's all one word, whisperandthunder.org. I wrote a poem called And Nobody Cared. When I wrote that poem, I go through these experiences where I actually feel what a mother is going through, and sometimes even dads, you know, I feel what they're going through. And I wrote these words down, and it was the story of a mother who lost her daughter, whose body was found by a tourist. And the tourist said, oh, well, it was just an Indian girl. No past, no present, no future, no cash. And the tragedy is that a lot of these girls are so desperate. They're so desperate that they unwittingly and with a lot of pain go out and they find themselves exposed to the most horrible predators who use them, abuse them, and then eliminate them.
You know, the stats for the children in the welfare system is that over 50% of those kids are sexually abused. They're more likely to be abused in the system than out. And those kids often go missing. And it's because yes. they're not, nobody's watching over them. They're the ones that can go missing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is a tragedy that I do my best to look into, because poverty leads to such crimes. And, you know, you're talking about 50% of children on welfare, children who are in foster care. Some of the biggest traffickers, mind you, are foster parents.
Yes.
They, you know, they will use these children while they're getting paid by the state to take care of these children. And we're including boys here. Boys are also included in the statistics of sexual abuse, sexual trafficking. It is really, really horrible. And I don't know if you can hear the anger in my voice, but it makes me very angry that any child should have to suffer such indignities, pain, and sorrow, no matter who they are.
Well, the NSA has all that information. They could take it out if they focused. They're illegally collecting all the information in the country. Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah.
In the world,
absolutely.
Whatever. Okay, yeah. Well, then mm-hmm. use it. Use it to take out all these people that are committing all these crimes. They have that information.
Oh, sure. If you take all the alphabet soup of the federal government, you know, both in Canada and in the United States, and only Creator knows what kind of technology they have in Central Turtle Island and south of the border of Central, including the islands, which are part of the Americas. We'll be honest here. And yeah, I can count their nostril hairs. They can hear what I'm saying. The NSA is not reputed to use information to help anybody.
I know.
Okay. And the same
Very
goes with the
sad.
CIA. It is very sad. It's very
They
tragic.
have it all, and they're using it
Yes,
for
they do.
nefarious purposes. And
Absolutely.
they could actually catch all these horrible of the most horrible people by keeping within the Constitution, by looking at metadata, finding that metadata of trafficking or any of those keywords, symbols that mean, a pizza or whatever that means,
Yeah,
pedophilia. And they
exactly.
could find everyone. Oh, I don't know about everyone, but they could take that whole network down very quickly.
I totally agree with you. Now here's the problem with that. We have Elefantes and we have the Podesta brothers. We have people in very, very high places involved in very, very nefarious commissions of crimes against children, and nothing happens to them, my sister. Nothing happens to them. They go after the lower levels just to say we did something, but I suspect, and this is I'm a behavioral profiler, and as a profiler, and I have an extraordinary partner in that field, who actually lives in Australia. She's a teacher of forensic psychology and profiling, and I observe the behaviors of government and how they handle the information they get from the CIA to the NSA to the FBI, I mean, we don't have the resources, but I profile the behaviors, and the only time they do anything is if they catch what they call a patsy, and a low-level patsy, and then they have cutouts to distract from the actual high-powered perpetrators of these crimes against our children.
Yeah, the laws are only for the peasants. So how did we get into this situation where the worst of the worst are leading us? I mean, it's so I don't want leaders like that. I don't want them up there. How did we get in this situation where the most, I mean, even if these in a prison, those are the worst criminals. Even the criminals hate them. How did we get
Yeah,
into this? Yeah, how do we get into this situation where the people, where the biggest lowlives are running our country and the world?
okay, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm, well, sort of. I don't know if I'm ever ready for the true answer, but I'm trying to figure it out.
okay, well, I'm gonna give you a baseline fact. The founding fathers of the United States established what they called, which is the operative word, a constitutional republic where the people have representatives in first in the colonies, and then as it developed into the United States, they have a number of representatives in Congress, right? Okay. Now we have the POTUS. Okay, we have a sitting POTUS there. If you think that when you go to the voting box on November 4th, that your vote counts, think again. Think again. Now, honestly, I did not want either one of these past candidates in office because I've done my own homework. And one more for personality, and lack of diplomacy for, and we'll leave it at that. And the other one because, the other
Most evil
candidate.
person on the planet, practically.
Okay, you said it. I didn't, but yeah, I agree. And the danger with her was that she was the most dangerous
Yes,
because she's
yes.
eloquent, she's intelligent, she has a law degree. But yeah, she was the She's
Evil.
one of the most dangerous people. But what happens is that if one person wins the popular vote, that doesn't mean a thing, my sister. When it it's and then when it comes to the Electoral College, The POTUS is not elected. The POTUS is selected.
But they usually go with the popular vote.
Not usually. Maybe at one point in the 20th century, maybe. And maybe before that, that was more of a possibility because the population was smaller. But
so now, is it theater on all these media channels when they talk about such and such taking a state?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's all theater. It's all show. And, you know, when the corporations are the ones that buy the policy. Amshel Rothschild is reputed to have said, "Give me control of a nation's money and I care not who makes the laws."
So why did they pick Trump
over Hillary? Well, Hillary is, I'm going to try to be as kind as possible.
Oh, don't be kind. She doesn't deserve kindness.
I totally agree. She's.
I've done enough shows. I did a 4-hour thing on Haiti with Azili Danto, and I was sick after that show because I couldn't. And so there aren't words to describe what I think about Hillary Clinton, both Clintons. But go ahead.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, you're dealing with a criminal dynasty there. Absolutely, with no doubt, for years. You know, I covered Hillary since the days when she was first lady, who was actually president.
She doesn't care about anybody.
No,
she has no empathy.
No.
She's, and I don't know about, I mean, Trump seems like he, I don't know. I mean, if he was selected by people who do the crimes that we're talking about, I guess I don't even know what to think.
Well, my problem with President Trump is that the man is not really aware of what's going on. He's a showman. He's a reality show host with a very, very bad personality, and I think that. I'm going to tell you what I've researched, what I've heard. You know, I wish I had more facts to back it up, but I understand that he owed 72 central banks a lot of money, and those 72 banks bailed him out. And as I quoted before, give me control of a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws. Think about that. I believe, and I pray for President Trump, because I believe that he's being manipulated and used by powerful, behind-the-scenes corporate interests.
I agree. I think he actually would clean up a lot of this stuff. His rhetoric on the campaign trail was really pretty good. I just don't know if, you know, I don't care. The problems are so bad that we're talking about that maybe it takes an egomaniac kind of narcissist, as long as their goals are to look like the best president ever, you know, and that is to clean some of this stuff up. I don't know. I just have to look at I just did a thing, a video that came out, the 5 best and 5 worst actions of Trump. Mm-hmm. Just came out yesterday. And he's done some really good things. And then he's also done some really bad things. So I just look at actions. I'm tired of the whole rhetoric baloney. And I'm just going to look at what they do. And then let's see. Okay, everybody who's really loves Trump, it's like, okay, I'll give him every opportunity to like him. I want him to be good, trust me. But I'm going to be looking at his actions, not words.
Well, I think that you have nailed an important fact. And like I said, You know, we opened up with the trafficking situation, the trafficking horrors that are going on throughout this entire hemisphere, and not just here, but throughout the entire world, of missing women and girls, you know, exploited and trafficked. Okay.
And young
Now,
boys
and young boys as well. Yes.
Yes.
Which a quick parentheses, VAWA, the Violence Against Women Act, was an actual Hilarion law, not bill, because I believe that after after what Bill did, I think that Hillary just came to hate all men. It's a very unbalanced law. I think it's a good idea. It's a good idea. VAWA is a good idea. But I think it's now being used as a weapon. So, you know.
No, humans cannot do anything without turning it too far or being abusive. It's like,
exactly.
Doesn't matter who you are,
right.
You're going to end up abusing people. That's why I think
Absolutely.
The whole male-female divide is bogus. I think all this stuff.
It is.
Why can't we
it
just
is.
Love each other and care about each other's needs? But keep going.
That would be the ideal. That would be ideal, Sarah. Now, okay, I'm going to quickly cover my position, and I'm going to mention one other chief. The Taino call their chiefs cacique, so I'm going to refer to him that way, as a chief. And you know, we discussed this earlier. I'm not a leader. I'm not a ruler. I'm not a queen. I am not a dictator. I am there to serve my people, and the very public servant has lost all meaning when it comes to political leaders, when it comes to law enforcement, when it comes to any of the governmental agencies and bodies that make the laws and break the laws. They break their own laws. You know,
yeah,
their
laws
don't
apply.
They don't apply, right? They have wings that fly above the law.
Well,
but...
and I just want to interrupt for a second. Podesta Brothers, they have a clear police drawing or investigate. I don't know who did it, the FBI or somebody. It looks identical to the Podesta Brothers on that little girl that was missing.
Yes.
Anyways, keep going. It's so
exactly.
obvious.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, honestly, you know, if I was granted the authority to run an independent investigation into these laughable excuses for humanity, I would take them down in a heartbeat. They would be doing hard time, you know, with other guys who do not like child molesters.
Exactly. Let's put them in the real prisons.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
golf club there.
exactly.
But, see, I'm a chief, and I, you know, they say, oh, you're such a good leader, and it's okay. I do lead in certain areas, you know, which is more like guidance, counseling people, but, you know, the political system that we have now is not consistent with the concept of public service. You know, they've lost it, and if they ever had it, I really don't know. I wasn't born in the 1700s or in the 1600s. My spirit may have been around a long time, but I don't remember that. But Cacique Jose Tureku Lopez of the Yaya Waili Taino tribe in the Bronx, New York, is another one who serves his people. He serves. He doesn't strut around like a peacock. And you know, if the day I see a president that walks humbly, you know, somewhat like a JFK. I think JFK, with all the faults he may have had, at least had enough humility to try to relate to his constituency. And you know, we've lost that relationship. They've lost that connection with the people they are called to what? Serve.
It takes the rare person to see themselves
very
that
rare.
way.
Very rare. Well, who creates the image? We're the ones that create the image, Sarah.
But they don't want people like that in office. They want people they can manipulate. And because somebody like me, well, maybe someday I'll run for my office. I don't know. But someone like me are going to go after people like the Podesta brothers. I won't be in office and get into a situation. I can't say that that would wouldn't happen, but I wouldn't allow that. I mean, I couldn't sleep at night knowing that I was a puke helping these people be the worst of humanity. I mean, what's the point of that? Then my whole life is a waste of living.
Whoa, you know, you're talking a major game of football. Now, I'm not a football fan, but, you know, the complicated moves of defensive and offensive on the football field, that's what you're dealing with in the political arena.
Sure, I know.
You're dealing with defense and offense, and guaranteed, a good politician, a good senator, good congressman or woman, you know.
But that's my job. That's our job. That's our job to expose all this crap to make offense way easier.
Well, I totally agree. But I'm going to bring up a couple of issues here, my sister. See, a lot of people were crazy about Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. Even I raised my hand in guilt. All right, who voted for this man? I did in 2008. Now, I profiled his behaviors. I profiled his actions. Yeah. And it got to the point where I contacted him and said, "You are lying through your teeth."
And what did
you
he say?
You are a liar. Well, didn't say anything. You know, I publicly exposed what he did. He revived the Woodrow Wilson era Espionage Act, which is an open war on people like you.
Exactly. They prosecuted more journalists under the Espionage Act than every single president combined.
Absolutely.
And I don't think exactly. Trump's doing much of that. Right. I mean, he has rhetoric of fake news, but I don't.
Well, Trump is kind of funny because, you know, if they say, well, he's a horrible president, you're fake news. Oh, he's a great president. You're real news. You know, with him, it's more like an ego thing. You know, he doesn't like, I can understand he doesn't want his image tarnished. But, you know, the truth of the matter is that if you're going to be in public office and you're going to be the face of the public, you have to expect scrutiny.
Well, it makes it entertaining a little bit. Some of that stuff is like, oh my God. you have to admit.
That's true. That's true.
It's like, say that?
But some of these points are very, you know, they're very sensitive because, you know, I love what someone said. I believe he was on YouTube. He said, "Truth can withstand scrutiny. Truth can withstand scrutiny." Mr. Obama had said several things, and you asked, "How did we get to the leaders that we have?" I watched the Jimmy Dore show. He's hysterical and he's very intelligent. And you know, I like what he said. We have Trump because of Obama. Because what Obama did was he gave us Romney Care.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Under the Affordable Care Act. So people are going broke trying to find the cheapest insurance to take care of themselves and their families.
Everybody has worse insurance.
Exactly. But you have your variety in society. Some can afford it, some cannot. This has always been true. Now, let's cover indigenous traditions. Let's do this very quickly. In the old days, before we were invaded, most of the tribes would be considered under McCarthyism as communists. But the truth of the matter is, in tribes, nobody went hungry. The medicine man or woman took care of everybody. And the economies were absolutely fantastic because they ran a barter system. Nobody did without. Nobody starved. Nobody died needlessly. We had our problems. We had intertribal wars. That is true. And before somebody comes and says, well, you know what, you're talking about the Europeans coming here and brutalizing you. Well, you guys did that to yourselves. You did that amongst yourselves. Well, you know, the truth is, yeah, we had our problems. We're human beings. We're not perfect. But we had the potential to do what the Haudenosaunee did. The Haudenosaunee created the six nations, originally the Five Nations Confederacy, and then the Tuscarora joined in the 1700s, and they became the Six Nation Confederacy based on the teachings of two men, a Hiawatha and Daganoweda, one Huron, one Mohawk. And if they had the ability to do that, even Ben Franklin said, if these red savages can do this, why not us civilized, decent?
Yeah, right.
White people. Well, he said that.
Well,
1740,
well, I'm sure he did.
But it was a grudging respect that he had for the system. We don't have that system anymore. We do not have a democracy. And I don't want people being fooled by this. We don't even have a constitutional republic. We don't have representation. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the myths of taxation without representation, and that's what started the whole false flag of the Boston Tea Party. You know, they dressed up like Indians and they got the Indians in trouble, you know, throwing the tea that was supposed to go back as taxes to England as a tribute. Well, you know what? That's a lie. Because you drive up to a gas pump today, and what raises prices on gasoline and cigarettes and things like that? It's not the price of the product itself. It's the taxes. I drove behind a guy, and the price was really good on the gas. As soon as the guy left, the attendant raised his hand. Boy, I'm really dating myself here. Raised his hand and said, wait. And then I see the price of the gas go up just before I got to the pump. We're still being taxed without representation.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, you know, what's so interesting is about the barter system, you know, they call it communist. It was truly a free market. It was absolutely. The absolute definition of free market.
Absolutely.
And free market is the most ethical thing that you can really have, but you have to understand what free market really is. It's not capitalism in the way that we understand capitalism. Free Agreed. Market, yeah, you guys, a barter system, what the Indians had was a free market, which Absolutely. Is really cool to study. Actually, they should study it just to see how it actually worked.
I don't think they're interested in doing that now.
They don't.
Sister, because, you know, there's a lot of money. Going back to our original topic, there's a lot of money.
It's the largest black market. It's the largest market. But it's the largest black market. And it's a very organized business. And we have the most powerful people on top of that organized business leading our country and leading the CIA and pieces of the FBI. And then there we are fighting against it. Everybody hates them. Our worst criminals, our drug dealers hate these guys. And if there's one thing, there's one thing that we could unite over, it's this.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Every race, every sex, every type of human being, down to the criminal to the angel, could unite over this. And I just don't know why they're still there. I don't know how we could be so united against a subject, an issue, and still have it sitting in front of us.
I have a theory, which I think is a good working theory. Love and hate, for example, are equal in power. You can love somebody supremely, what the Greeks call agape in the Koine Greek, agape, which is an unconditional love, okay? Then you can have hatred that is so vile and so evil that no matter what you do to try to make peace, they will do everything they can to destroy you. Love is very quiet. It has a softer voice. It doesn't brag about its nature. Hatred is out there telling you, I hate you. I hate you. And they say it so much that it's almost like a KKK rally. Oh yeah, let's kill these people of color. Let's get rid of the Jew. Let's get rid of the black man. It just penetrates because it's so loud.
Or even towards white people too, right? It's all directions. I can see why some of these people would hate white people, but it happens. It's every direction.
Well, you know, racism is racism, and I don't care who practices it. There's no such thing as reverse discrimination, my sister. Discrimination is discrimination. Racism is racism, no matter who perpetrates it. I refuse to hate the descendants of the ones that caused us harm. My job is to educate them and see what we can do to move forward, to make a better world. But you know, as long as we have, and here we go, I'm trying to stick to subject here. As long as we have MMIWGs, there will never be a healing between the indigenous community and the mainstream communities of Canada, the United States, or the communities south of the stolen borders of the United States.
What's the MMIWGs?
Those are the missing, missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Sorry about that. I should have explained that.
No, that's
you know, as long as we have problems like that, and I'm sorry, I love my brothers and sisters of the Shield, but as long as there are poorly trained, violent, vile men and women wearing a badge and carrying a gun, there will never be peace. There will never be a resolution. There has to be a change within the heart of these people, because good cops are paying for the actions of the bad. The military is another exploited organization. Sarah, do you really think that the military fights these wars in other countries to defend our freedoms?
No, but that's why the suicide rate against in the soldiers, the veterans, is really high. We have more people that in the last 15 years that have died from killing themselves from suicide than the Americans who've died in Vietnam War. And we've also bypassed the amount of Americans who've died in World War One. Now, World War Two, we're about halfway there because there was a lot more that died. Because these veterans get there and they're broken, and whatever they're seeing, whatever they're feeling, and they don't want to be part of anything anymore. So that's the red canary in the gold mine, is the suicide rate amongst veterans.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They are treated so terribly. And you know, they don't fight to defend the Constitution. They don't fight to defend our freedoms. You see, the elites, they pay for these wars. And you know what's really horrible, Sarah, is that World War II was paid for, was financed by American bankers.
I know. And they financed both sides.
They financed both sides, and they drank Coca-Cola in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. And you know, and those
finish your statement, those concentration.
Well, yeah, the concentration camps were actually labor camps financed by the American bankers and other royal families and elites throughout the world. It's not just American Nazis that did this. You know, even the royal family was involved in the financing of those concentration camps that produced goods for the war.
Would you be willing, we're kind of running out of time here, would you be willing to come back on a you know, maybe every so often and just give us your viewpoints on what you're thinking from, you know, the tribal perspective and from your own personal perspective?
I would be honored to, Sarah. You know, there is so much in my heart and mind that I feel need to be told. I do need to amend one thing, though. Back in the 1980s, I was the victim of sexual assault, sexual violence. And I think back at that time, and I came very close to being one of the trafficked, one of the missing. But the great spirit watched over me. And I wanted to say that before we close, because, yeah, I can understand what our people are going through in this. But I would be honored to come back and have a conversation with you. I think you're absolutely awesome, Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I can feel your loving spirit. So thank you so much and for everything that you do.
Thank you, Sarah. And you keep up the good work, too.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.